Remaker's Mark, Episode 49, Double Indemnity. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Remaker's Mark. Here we are in our 49th episode where we'll be discussing the film noir classic Double Indemnity. With me, as always, are my friends Andy Wicks. Say, Andy, what is your favorite Billy Wilder movie? And how you doing?
Super good. And The Apartment is my favorite Billy Wilder film.
Also done here on Remaker's Mark.
Also done right here.
For sure, link to.
In Remaker's Mark.
In this very internet. Very good. Jeremy Nilsson, how about you? How are things for you this fine evening? Happy grand old day night to you. And what is your favorite Billy Wilder movie?
Thank you. Thank you. Super fine is how I'm doing. And I would say, man, probably Some Like It Hot.
Nice.
I can't come up with one I enjoy better than a screwball comedy.
It's a good one.
This is our third Billy Wilder movie that we're doing.
It is our third Billy
That's
Wilder
crazy.
Movie. And our.
I wonder if we looked by director who we've done the most of. And Billy Wilder might be the one.
I think he is, yeah. I mean, what other ones have we done multiples of? I don't know. I mean, George Lucas, but, you know, we did Phantom Menace and A New Hope. That was two. Curious. Stay tuned, everybody. We'll do some research on that.
We'll get back to you on that one.
Indeed. Indeed. Lee Indemnity, how are you this fine evening? And what is your favorite Billy Wilder? You're the Billy Wilder scribe of the group, so I'm very intrigued to hear what you say to this.
I'm great. And for me, it's probably a tie between Some Like It Hot and The Apartment.
Nice.
I like them both equally.
So we've nailed the Billy Wilder catalog as far as we are concerned.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. Mark Josting is feeling like poo this fine evening. So, Mark, I hope you feel better soon. He will not be joining us, but get well soon, Mark, and we will do our best to impersonate him throughout the episode. We'll see how that goes. It's probably going to be terrible and great, but terrible and great. So, my name is Kyle. I will be your host once again this fine evening. My favorite Billy Wilder movie, man, it's really hard not to pick The Apartment, but just because it's gotten so much love, I'll say Double Indemnity. I think so. But it also makes me realize that I need to see Sunset Boulevard. I feel like I've seen it, but I feel like it's been way, way too long. And The 7-Year Itch. I don't know if I've actually ever seen The 7-Year Itch.
It's a really great one. I like that.
Yeah, that's Marilyn Monroe, right?
Yeah, that's probably my second favorite.
Got it. Ooh, I forgot about that. That is a good one, too.
Yeah, yep. Cool. Well, I have some homework to do. That's good. I'll take it. So before we find out a little bit more about Double Indemnity, we are going to move on to our Remaker's Mark recommendation section. And this was my choice. Double Indemnity was my movie. So I am drunk with power and possibly a tiny little bit of beer. And so I'm going to be talking about something that I, Kyle, would like to recommend. And I'm going to be doing podcasts this go around, to no one's surprise, being a podcast producer and consumer extraordinaire. I'm not saying I'm a producer extraordinaire. I'm a consumer extraordinaire. That didn't go well. Anywho, the podcast I would like to recommend is one called Forest 404. It's a BBC audio production. It is, I think, 9 episodes long. They're about maybe 20 to 30 minutes each, so it's not a huge time commitment. The premise is something that kind of wavers throughout. You sort of understand, or you come to understand, what the universe actually is in which it exists. But you can tell it's kind of a dystopian future where technology has sort of overrun the natural world. And there is sort of an audio file of a forest that is seen as a virus amongst the people that are still living in this sort of urban world. That's as far as I'll go as far as description goes. It's very well produced, very well made. Like, I mean, you can definitely tell it's a BBC production. It's got really, really solid design. Bonobo, who is a electronic musician that I don't know very well, but I recognize the name, did music for it. It's really solid. I would recommend it. So if you are sci-fi leaning and you like audio dramas, then I would definitely give that a go. I think it's one that I would highly recommend. So Forest 404, look for it on the podcast client of your choosing.
I just subscribed to it.
Sweet. I hope you like it. I really dug it. I thought it was good. Give it a go.
It's interesting. I was actually just thinking about this the other day, how my own podcast tastes have shifted over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were to give me a list of all the podcasts I listened to when I started listening to podcasts, I maybe only listen to one of them anymore.
Yeah.
And even
yeah.
that one, only sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, I have the kind of standards like Radiolab, This American Life, 99% Invisible. I mean, like the 800-pound gorillas of podcasts, if you will. But other than that, yeah, it's very, very different from back then. And I don't even know that I started listening to those right away, but eventually. True dat. All right. So let's jump into Double Indemnity now. Andy, as our summary guy, please give us a summary of the film, and maybe we can talk a little bit of history as well.
Happy to. Double Indemnity, which I will struggle to say correctly all night long.
I hear you. I'm there, right there with you.
Is a 1944 Billy Wilder movie that some would call the archetypal film noir piece of cinema. It's heavy on the fast talk and fast talk, see, and not one to mess with things like volume. Fred McMurray plays Walter Neff, a successful insurance salesman who gets caught up in the schemes of one Phyllis Dietrichson, played by Barbara Stanwyck's hair. And how things go amok. Such muckety hilarity will ne'er be found elsewhere.
You see?
You see?
Very nice.
Here, babe, put this away for me. Or here, baby, put this away for me. I think he says to the yeah. random woman walking past him in the office. Kyle, this was your pick, as you have said.
Yeah.
Please tell us why.
So the film noir genre intrigues the hell out of me because it feels so... dated, and usually when you say that, it's like, oh my gosh, it just feels so dumb and old. But in this case, it's like dated in the way where it's like a fine wine, you know, like hopefully it's aged over time. Now, certainly lines such as, hey, babe, hold this for me or put this away for me, like not so much. So from our perspective as a podcast, I thought it would be really interesting to see how we can remake a film noir now. Like, what can we do from a tone perspective, from a casting perspective, that would make it maintain the style and vibe that made those movies so incredibly cool and so neat to me. I just love like the, you know, the really low lighting, everything lit by one light bulb or light flashed across people's eyes only, you know, that kind of stuff. Like the tropes of the genre are really interesting to me and really fascinating to me. But I think if you were to remake that exact same movie today, it would feel pretty weird. So I thought it would be a good challenge for us. So that was kind of how I got there. Does anybody else have any history with the film?
I saw it for the first time for this podcast, but I am actually surprised at that because I, like you, Kyle, am a huge fan of film noir as a style. And so the fact that I haven't seen this is fairly shocking to me and a little embarrassing. But yeah, I loved it and it makes me want to see more film noir, and I'm very excited to talk about it.
Right on. Me too. So, as usual, in the first part of our discussion of the film, we are going to be recasting the movie. We have three major character picks and five minor character picks, which is pretty much the entire movie as far as characters go, which is pretty great. So we are recasting literally the whole movie. The first major character is that of Barton, played by Edward G. Robinson originally. Jer, that is yours. Tell us about Barton.
Barton Keyes is the dogged claims investigator and friend to Walter Neff, who is torn between his duty as an investigator and his friendship with Walter. His ideas of idealism and cynicism, and he is good at his job. He sniffs out false claims with an innate sixth sense, and his friendship with Walter and the investigation into the Dietrichson claim really builds an emotional punch that just climaxes in the third act, and he's as close to an antagonist as the film has, and I think that his involvement is as key to this movie as anybody else's. Now get out of here before I throw my chair at you, my desk at you, which is one of my favorite lines in the movie, because it is the Han Solo Princess Leia. I love you. I know it's get out of here before I throw my desk at you. I love you too. and that is their relationship. And, I will stand by the fact that I think that the character of Barton Keyes and the way that Edward G. Robinson played him is such a huge linchpin in this movie. He builds that emotional connection to Walter and really brings out the fact that what Walter is doing has such a weight to it. More so than the relationship, I think, between Walter and Phyllis, which is not strange, but it's not really there. Like, she's essentially using him, and he's kind of getting strung along a little bit. But I think the friendship between Barton and Walter is much more authentic and much more of what is at play in the movie. So for my recasting, I am recasting this as it will be taking place in the 1940s. My remake will be a 1940s movie, filmed now. And so I wanted to, one of the primary things that I looked for in my recasting is somebody that looks super dapper in 1940s suits. So I went for Barton Keyes. I went with John Slattery.
Oh, nice.
That's a nice one.
Who most of you would remember from Mad Men. He played Roger Sterling in Mad Men. He also played Howard Stark in several of the Marvel movies.
Mm-hmm.
He was excellent in Spotlight that came out a couple years ago.
Yes.
The movie about the Boston Globe and the Catholic Church. He is currently... what has he done most recently? I think the last time I saw him was in the Romanoffs TV series, which he was also great in that as well. But just dapper AF. And I think that he could really pull off the gruff exterior, but you know, somebody that is weighed down by this decision and this investigation and seeing his friendship with Walter causing conflict in it. So that's my pick.
I like it. That's a good one. He definitely has the era down and the genre down for sure.
Yeah, it might be a little too on the nose with what he's done in the past, but I think he is solid. He was such a great little, especially, spoiler alert, especially in Avengers Endgame, mm-hmm. His little cameo in that when he and Tony Stark, when Tony met his dad in the 40s, and that was one of my favorite moments in the entire movie. But yeah, he's got the era down, so I think he'll knock it out of the park.
I like it. Sometimes on the nose is that way for a reason.
Exactly. Lee, you are next. Who is your pick for Barton Keyes?
Well, I really like the character a lot. I mean, I think he's older. You can tell he's got a lot of experience. In some ways, acts as a mentor to Walter. And I wanted somebody who had that type of confidence and charisma. So I went with Liam Neeson.
Oh yeah,
just thinking of I guess like his roles like in Schindler's List and I don't know,
like pre-Taken Liam.
Yeah. Basically. Yeah,
a little bit.
Yeah, a bit. I don't know, I just think he's got kind of like a, you know, a gentle aura about him, but he can also be very, you know, he's got sort of leadership qualities, you can tell. So that's what I wanted in the character of Keyes.
I would expect anyone to just immediately confess everything as soon as Liam Neeson brought them into the room to question them. Wouldn't even have to say a word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's also got a lot of, the character anyway, shows a lot of empathy. And, you know, I think Liam Neeson would be perfect for that as well.
Yeah, when Liam Neeson isn't playing somebody trained to kill people, I think he is really good at playing somebody that has a lot of heart inside of a gruff exterior.
Yep.
Yep, totally. I think that's spot on.
All right. So let's move on to Kyle.
Yeah, so the thing that I basically focused on the most when recasting this was dialogue. I wanted somebody that could that could spit the film noir dialogue speedily and convincingly and make it seem like it wasn't out of place, which is really, really hard to do because it feels super out of place. And that's kind of what makes it great. But, you know, it's either kind of a record scratch moment or a boy, am I totally in for this kind of moment. And I wanted to avoid the latter as much as I can just in the delivery of it so that it makes sense that the person is talking that way. So for Barton, I wanted somebody that had a lot of presence, that was a little more steely than Edward G. Robinson. I thought that character, I don't know why I wanted it to be a little bit less emotional, but I did just a little bit. I think, Jerry, your summary of him being kind of the linchpin of this is very much true. And I'm not second guessing this a little bit. I think he can be emotional, but I chose him sort of for his stoicism. I chose Lance Reddick. You might know him from Fringe. He's also in the John Wick series. In Fringe, he played like the boss of the Fringe crew. He is a really, really strong presence on screen. If you look him up, I think you'll probably recognize him. He is really, really cool. Most of what he does is very straightforward, but it is so commanding at the same time. And I think would have kind of that Liam Neeson, caring, but would break you in a second kind of vibe. So he, for whatever reason, he just came up first for me, and I just decided to stick with that. So, Lance Reddick for Barton for me.
Holy cow, he does a lot of voiceover work.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. Yeah, indeed. Has anybody else watched Fringe? I probably just totally screwed myself if not. Did anybody watch Fringe?
That's one of those shows that was always on my list and never got to.
It's pretty good. I'd recommend it.
It's a very long list.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, totally. I wouldn't put it at the top, but it's, you know, it started off very much as like the new X-Files before X-Files came out. And it really sort of pivoted into... I would say it was still pretty much kind of like a X-Files ripoff, but it's the kind of X-Files ripoff that's like, you know what? I'm down for an X-Files ripoff. If it's done well, then I'm 100% in. So I think it's pretty solid.
Lee, he played Reggie in the Frank's Brother episode of It's Always Sunny.
Oh. Okay. Then I think I know who you're talking about.
Yay, context. Woo! All right. Normally, this would be Mark. Mark, since he is not here, I'm going to announce his pick for him. And then I'm going to say maybe a sentence or two about why I assume that Mark chose this person. So for the role of Mark, I think that Mark really wanted someone that was emotional, but not too emotional. That was possibly a hip hop star, but not yet. I think he was probably looking for someone who had about a size 10, maybe 9.5 foot. And the person that he went with to meet that criteria was Charlie Day. Charlie, you might know from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, mentioned a few moments ago. Another thing that Mark used for his criteria was that the name had to be something that was part of a Roald Dahl novel or story. So that was really, I mean, if you put all those things together, that really lands it down pretty solidly on Charlie Day for Barton Keyes. Anyone else have any thoughts or feedback or other criteria that you can imagine based on that?
I mean, Matilda Ziegler doesn't really fit the bill otherwise, so that probably had to be Charlie Day.
Yeah, yeah, no, I think that was taken into consideration, but didn't quite land.
Yeah.
If he was going for a comedic remake, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, even in the more serious roles, like when he was the scientist in Pacific Rim, which there's serious air quotes over serious role on that one, but yeah, I just, every time I picture him talking, it's so high-pitched and loud and so not noir-y. I'm curious.
I could hear the him talking about his gut a lot. I could hear that in Charlie Day's voice.
All I can see, though, is that one scene from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia where he's got the billboards or the...
In the mailroom.
The mailroom. So that's all I can picture.
Pepe Silvia or whatever. Pepe Silvia.
Yeah, Pepe Silvia.
That's all I can see. And maybe that's what this movie needs. That's maybe what this movie needs.
Did I ever play or show you the plays drums along with that one?
Yes, that was amazing.
Oh my God, it's so good. We'll link to that. That and the Boomhauer one. And you will thank us forever and ever because they are so good.
There's another one. That whole genre or whatever you want to call that, of people playing music along to vocal, just people speaking,
mm-hmm.
is one of my favorite things that is out, that exists right now. And there's another one that it's, oh shoot, what's her name? She's a rapper.
Queen Latifah?
No, she's new right now. She's on the tip of my tongue. But anyway, it's like a 10-second thing where she's talking about these Uggs that she just got, and somebody played along with it. And we're going to link that too because it's hilariously awesome.
Nice.
I'll find it.
Right on. So last but not least, Andy, who was your choice for Barton?
So I'm going to show my hand early and saying that Barton Keyes was the only character in this movie that I liked.
Hmm. Interesting.
That you liked or that you didn't like?
I did like.
Okay.
And I agree, Jared, that I thought Barton Keyes was the linchpin of the entire film. Based on my remake, as much as I would love for it to take place in the early 40s, my casting will simply not allow that. And that will become clear as we go along. For Barton Keyes, for a role this profound and important, sometimes you have to bring out the big guns. So I brought out the biggest gun.
A robot.
Meryl Streep.
It has come around once again.
Meryl Streep will.
It works.
Meryl Streep will play this role. She will. I will not change the name. She will still be named Barton Keyes, and that will be okay.
Yeah.
And no one will dare question why a woman is named Barton Keyes, nor will anyone claim her inner person telling her when giving her heartburn when things are awry, and that she will get to the bottom of this, come hell or high water, and God willing, and the creek don't rise, she'll figure it out. Meryl to the Streep.
I mean, you can't argue with Meryl ever. She will cut you. She will cut you hard.
She will cut you.
Nice. All right, so for the role of Barton Keyes, Jer went with John Slattery, Lee went with Liam Neeson, I went with Lance Reddick, Mark went with Charlie Day, and Andy went with Meryl Streep. Up next is Phyllis. Lee, tell us about Phyllis.
Phyllis, fulfilling the role of the definitive femme fatale, lures Walter into her web of conspiracy and deceit. With the promise of happily ever after, she convinces him to help dispose of her husband under the guise of an accident, all while being willing to sell even him down the river when the plan goes awry. I'm probably going to speak blasphemy here, but I didn't really believe that anybody's going to compromise their morals for Barbara Stanwyck. She's a fine actress and everything, but I didn't
think
that
coldly, she was, that's cold.
Yeah, I didn't think she was that believable in being like this irresistible, person that somebody's going to risk going to prison for.
Didn't have the smolder. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. She's kind of like Betty Grable in that sense. Like, I don't see what the big deal is, but I do think that she's a great actress, and I thought that this was a really great performance. However, the person that I picked is someone who I would absolutely believe that anybody would, could be charmed by her to the point of doing things that they wouldn't normally do. So I went with Gal Gadot, who people would know as Wonder Woman most recently. And I believe she's been in some Fast and Furious movies. I wouldn't know. I've never seen them.
Yeah, me either.
I think she's a fantastic actress, and she has all kinds of, she has a real presence, I guess, on screen.
She could have a smolder.
Yeah. Total smolder. Like she, yeah.
Yeah. Whatever she's in, it really makes you stop and watch. So, I thought she'd be perfect for this.
I like that pick.
Yeah. Smolder wise, I'm all in. I would have a little bit of a hard time. If this were in the film noir dialogue style, I feel like she might have a little bit of a hard time with that. And it's not like a English as a second language or anything kind of deal, because, she has an accent, but it's not that. It's just like, I feel like her delivery is very much her own style, and not like the film noir style. I would happily be proven wrong, but that would be about the only thing that would kind of trip me up on that a little bit.
Yeah, I think she could. Well, and I guess it depends on how it's directed.
Yeah, like
who,
totally.
Who the director is. So,
yeah, I'm making assumptions of the old versus the new for sure.
Yeah. But yeah, Gal Gadot. I believe I'm pronouncing her name correctly, but who knows? Andy, who do you have for Phyllis?
I went with Emma Stone for Phyllis Dietrichson. I know we've chosen Emma Stone a lot. I am not usually one to choose Emma Stone, for I haven't been a huge fan of her until I saw The Favourite.
Mm.
And her performance in among the three female lead performances, I thought all three was fantastic, but her performance for this particular role, I thought was just fit like hand in a glove.
Andy, did you just say frantastic?
We'll rewind the tape.
No, I said, although Jared, I want to say little sidebar, I happen to be listening to our very first episode again, and man, that fantastic is just clear as day. It's so much fun to listen to.
It's been years of that.
Oh my god. Who knew the remaker's mark would be speech therapy? That would be. Oh, yeah. Carry on.
Thank you. So Emma Stone, her performance in The Favourite is great because she plays this character who is a kind of from a disgraced noble family. Now essentially has nothing and comes to the castle to work in whatever way that she can, starts out at the bottom and quickly figures out a way to work her way up the ladder very quickly, you know, kind of stepping on anyone who's in front of her without, you know, without any pause. So I saw a very similar characteristic in Phyllis's character, that she very much has her eyes on the prize, will use and abuse anyone who's near her to get to that goal and then leave him in the dust. So I thought that Emma Stone, who I also think has a good smolder. And again, I didn't really like it until I saw The Favourite. And then I was like, okay, now I'm convinced. So Emma Stone as Phyllis Dietrichson, please.
I could see it being a more affected version of it. You know, not quite so smoldering, but more convincing, if you will. Like you would believe... with a wee bit of smolder, but a lot more convincingnessosity, all of the above.
Yep. And I should say, I'm not intending my remake to be a film noir.
Yeah.
So,
okay,
there you go.
What are you making?
Just a film.
Okay.
I'm colorblind.
Just a murder mystery.
Free your mind and the rest will follow. Be colorblind.
Do, 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 do.
Don't be so shallow.
Mm, true words have ne'er been spoken.
Jer?
Yeah.
What is your fantastic pick?
I wanted somebody that was going to actually be in a film noir film. And so I chose Scarlett Johansson.
I've heard of her.
Johansson. She has been in several art house films. As a assassin named Black Widow, and more importantly for this pick, she played Janet Leigh in a movie about Hitchcock called Hitchcock, I believe, and nailed it. It was really good. And I just think that she has both the look of a femme fatale. And I think that dialogue-wise, she would just nail that rapid pace that Kyle was talking about. I don't know if I should have been snapping into the mic right then.
You're fine.
I think that she would... one of the problems that I have with Double Indemnity is that, like I said earlier, I didn't really buy... There was no emotional gravity to the relationship between Phyllis and Walter. And I think that somebody like Scarlett Johansson, who has some really good acting chops, could rectify that situation and make that relationship more grounded and more central to why all of the events are happening the way that they are. So that's who I went with.
Awesome. I like that a lot. I'm into it.
She would seem a much more natural successor to this role if it were made a true remake in the film noir style.
Yes.
I like that too.
Next we go to Mark.
Great.
Mark, who's your pick?
Yeah, so I'm gonna speak for Mark again.
Let's get Mark on the phone. Let's call him up. Let's have Mark get to
Oh, yeah,
right
sure.
Now.
We'll Skype him in. Boom bing bing. Boom bing bong. Boom bing bong. Hello? hey, Mark, it's Kyle. I just wanted to give you a chance to, I know you're not feeling well, sorry to hear that. I just wanted to give you the opportunity to talk about the motivation behind your pick and then tell us who it is.
Oh, sure. My choice. I wanted someone whose...
Don't make this go on.
Whose first name was a common name, but was poorly spelled, and their last name sounded like a word for someone who's doing great, but they're saying it while they have a cold. So my choice was...
Josh Brolin.
No, shut up. Was Catherine, K-A-T-H-E-R-Y-N. So that's the dumb spelling part. Catherine Winnick, which sounds like they're saying winning with a cold. So Catherine Winnick, you might know her from the TV show Vikings. You know, that's pretty much it. She was apparently in 51st Dates, but I've only saw the first 10, so I don't know where she goes in there. She's in that Polar movie with that guy that Jer really likes. That's about it. So it was misspelling and cold-based, but I think she's a good actress, too, so that's pretty much it. Okay, I gotta go.
Mark, did you have an uncredited voice acting role as Doug in the movie Up?
No, but I did hide under your porch because I love you, which is why I have a cold. So
well,
thanks.
That makes sense. That
thanks
tracks.
A lot. Okay. I got to go from the internet now. I got to be sick. Bye.
Bung. We need to make sure not to take Mark disc golfing in a swamp before podcasting ever again.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. Jeez. That's... Yeah. We went out yesterday, even just a short nine after a rainy night, and boy. Turns out he became Swamp Thing afterwards. Who knew?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Let's
so
let's not do that anymore.
Indeed. So Mark went with Catherine Winnick from Vikings. She definitely looks the part. She definitely looks to have that smolder. But I haven't seen her in anything else, so I can't vouch for it. But Mark is a smart guy, even if he doesn't sound like it.
If she played her character from Vikings in this movie, I would be much more interested in this movie.
Yeah?
Because I'm looking at pictures of her from Viking, and she looks tough.
Nice. All right.
That is a show. That is, again, another show that is on my list that I have never gotten to and want to for a variety of reasons.
Yeah, I've heard of and seen it on Netflix, I think, but I never actually watched it. So now I probably have to. Good job, Mark. I appreciate it.
Oh, also, she's in Polar, which, again, second podcast in a row. Mm-hmm. Go see that movie.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Now I will hand it off to myself, since Mark had to depart a little early there. So this is Kyle. Hi, not Mark. Not anywhere near Mark. Gosh. My choice wanted to get both Smolder and the spitting dialogue that I spoke of. More the former than the latter, but I wanted them to be able to do it. I thought, you know, I'm just going to say it. I went with Jennifer Connelly for this. A big viewpoint or a big sort of reference point for this for me was Dark City, which is like 20 years ago. So I was going to say something about the age, but you know, it doesn't matter. She does not look her age, to be honest. Like she does not look anything. She's not like old, right? I mean, she looks so young, but it doesn't really matter in film noir. Like, I don't know how old Barbara Stanwyck was or how old Fred McMurray were, but like they weren't young. You know what I mean? Like it was definitely... This was, you know, world-weary, wizened people. And so I thought Jennifer Connelly would do that swimmingly. Plus, I just think she is so freaking cool. I just really like her and have forever. So Jennifer Connelly was my pick.
Tis a good one.
Thank you. Thank you. I haven't seen her in anything in a while. So, you know, now it's time. So for the role of Phyllis, originally played by Barbara Stanwyck, Lee went with Gal Gadot. Andy went with Emma Stone, Jer went with Scarlett Johansson, Mark went with Catherine Winnick, and I went with Jennifer Connelly. Now, for our last major role, the role of Walter Neff, we are going to go to Mark, actually. And you know what? Let's see if we can get him back on the line here. Let's give this a try. Just a second here. Boom, boom, boom.
Boom, boom, boom. Hey, what? Oh, God, I thought we were done. You want me to? Okay. All right, here we go. Originally, originally played by Fred McMurray, Walter Neff is a rock star of rock stars, an insurance salesman. He's a straight shooter who puts his hat where he pleases and is certainly wise to the dame. However, even being wise to said dame, he still addresses her as baby and can't walk away from that hard kiss and that murder plot. Think he's rotten? Well, he thinks you're swell. He just might not go to the end of the line with you. Okay, bye. All right. Thanks, Mark. That was weird. I wasn't actually
Which way did he go?
He was like responding to me, but I wasn't there. He was just responding, which is very weird. So now I'm going to speak for Mark once again. I'm just going to try to channel his inner motivation. And for this one, it was very similar to the motivation in his second pick, in that the first name of the individual is also spelled wrong, but it's more commonly spelled wrong. This has some potential. Also, it is a nickname for where one can use the bathroom. And the second half of it is part of a Monte Cristo, I believe, but not the good part, not the best part, but just like a part. I mean, a Monte Cristo is a solid sandwich, but it's not the best part of that solid sandwich. So for the role of Walter Neff, Mark decided to go with John Hamm. I think that, he probably was going back to the Mad Men lineage of, you know, some of the misogyny and sexism that was present there. Got to imagine that played a part. But, I think that's a solid pick. Mark, if my motivation was wrong, don't call, don't say anything. We're just going to assume that's the case. I would say it's a little low-hanging fruit. I think on the nose in the way that is spot on, right? Begin with the John Slattery school.
Yep. He was on my list both for Walter and for Barton.
Yeah.
But yeah, ultimately I went slightly left of center, but still pretty much on the nose with my Slattery pick. But yeah, he would nail it, and he would be the Hollywood pick for this movie if it were remade.
Totally. Agreed. Agreed. Agreed.
Does he kiss as hard, though?
Yes. Probably harder.
Yeah, well, he's probably qualified then.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. So I'm up next once again. I decided to go... This is a pick that is either going to be perfect or terrible, and I'm hoping certainly for perfect, but I wanted somebody that had like a much more energy than Fred McMurray. I kind of liked the way that he was chilled out in this movie, but I wanted it to be a little bit harder, a little bit harsher. And I decided to go with Bill Hader. Now, I think Bill Hader is incredible. I think he is a wonderful actor. My only fear is that if he starts doing film noir dialogue, it's going to look like an SNL sketch of film noir. And I think he can do it without it, but it's like, man, is it going to be toeing the line? Like, it's going to be real close to that. I think he can totally do it. I don't know how the rest of it around it will feel when he's doing it. You know what I mean?
He can't. He just has to stay away from that kind of face that he makes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have a hard time listening to the overdub, you know, his narration.
Yeah.
His narration would sound... it would be hard to not picture it as an SNL sketch.
Yeah, that's my only worry. But I think he can totally do it. My main reference point for this is Barry, the show on HBO, which is so, so good. I would highly recommend it. He plays a hitman who goes to acting school, kind of trying to get out of the life. And so it even amongst that kind of meta piece in terms of the acting and presence has its presence there. But yeah, I think he'd be great. And I think he would be... as long as you buy into him and that, not in the sketch side of things, I think it would be top notch. So, yeah. Bill Hader. He's my guy. Andy, on to you. Who did you choose for Walter?
Again, not planning on making this a film noir and not planning on setting this into the 40s, which is too bad because I think the style, I love the style of the 40s, but just not going to work. I chose Mahershala Ali for this role.
Interesting. I like that. Well, a little diversity is a good thing.
Trying to bring a little diversity from the straight white male patriarchy, but whatever. Really, I think Mahershala Ali is a fantastic actor, and I think people would agree on that point. And I would really love to change the story a lot to make the plot work between him and my choice for Phyllis, which was Emma Stone. I'll get into that in the second part, but yeah, Mahershala Ali is who I chose. I thought it would put a lot more depth into this character, because I felt like there was little to no depth to the most of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think he's a handsome man.
Yeah, we're going to talk a lot in the second part about how film noir can make a journey into today and what that looks like. And I feel like that ties into that in a big way. So I'm looking forward to hearing how that works for you. So right on.
I am only a few episodes into his series of True Detective.
Oh, it's so good.
Man, is he good.
Yeah, he's incredible in that. Agreed.
That's my only feedback.
There you go. Well, on that one feedback, Jer, to you.
Yes, I, again, wanted to primarily find somebody that was going to look good in a suit and also was going to be able to accomplish the goals of classic 40s film noir. And for Walter, it's kind of somebody that is just slightly sort of dopey, but not a comic character. He's somebody that you almost feel sorry for, but you're not sure if you should feel sorry for him, and you probably shouldn't. But I went with Zachary Quinto. I think that's how he pronounces his last name.
I like that.
If you look at his IMDb page, his current bio picture pretty much nails what I'm imagining. And you would know him as Spock from the most recent Star Trek movies. And currently he is in a series called Nosferatu. That's NOS, the number 4, the letter A, and the number 2, where he plays one of, he basically is the lead sort of vampire-esque character. Also killer look on that one as well. But he's an understated actor, and I think that is something that this role needs. It's not a flamboyant role. It's not a loud, over-the-top role. It is very nuanced and dialogue-heavy, as everything in film noir is, and I think he could really punch those lines really well.
I dig that. I like that. It's interesting in thinking about that, how, this seems weird, but how similar the dialogue in Double Indemnity is to Spock. Like,
yeah,
very kind of
that's true,
flat but stunted. I don't know, it's really weird. I was like, that's weirdly close. That's very odd.
Yep.
So yeah, that's, you know, spot on. unexpectedreference.org.
is that a real website?
We'll find out. If so, we'll link to it.
Okay,
unless if
hashtag
it's not
unexpected,
it's not terrible.
Last but not least, Lee, who is your Walter Neff?
I guess I wanted someone who had sort of maybe a mysterious personality, not someone who's known for, you know, doing a lot of comedic stuff, but a lot of, I guess, heavier roles, more dramatic roles. So I went with Sebastian Stan, who people would probably know as the Winter Soldier in the Captain America movies. But he was also in I, Tonya. He played Jeff Galooly.
Oh, yeah.
And he was actually really, really good in that. But yeah, I think that he would have that sort of, I guess, intensity that this role would need. I don't see it being a comedic role at all. So I wanted someone who just had a little bit more, someone maybe with a darker delivery. So that's where I landed.
Yeah, it would make his choice to do this, to break the law, a little bit more reasonable. You know what I mean? Like, you could see some of the fire behind the eyes or some of that sort of uncertainty. I think that's right on. I really like that pick.
Thanks.
I really like Sebastian Stan, and I hope he gets work. So if it's in this, then I'm all for it.
Yeah. Agreed. So in our last major role, that of Walter Neff, originally played by Fred McMurray, Mark went with John Hamm. I went with Bill Hader. Andy went with Mahershala Ali. Jer went with Zachary Quinto, and Lee went with Sebastian Stan. So now we're on to the minor characters, or the minor characters, if you will. First is Mr. Norton. Lee, tell us about Mr. Norton.
As manager of the insurance company, Mr. Norton's job is to suspect fraud, which he does immediately upon hearing of the circumstances around Mr. Dietrichson's death. He communicates his suspicions to Barton and Walter with a lot of wide eyes and loudly delivered dialogue. I did not like Sam Gaines's performance in this movie. I thought it was too over the top. Maybe it's because he was in a scene with two very experienced actors who, you know, in their element seem very natural. And he felt his performance was more like he was, you know, trying too hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the character himself is pretty pivotal. He kind of acts as the audience surrogate at one point where he's pointing out something that the audience already knows. And, you know, I get the sense that he's a somewhat younger character. He still has experience. You know, he's obviously the manager. He's in charge, but he's still young enough that I feel like he has something to prove. So I went with Donald Gleason for this one.
Oh, yeah.
You might know him as, what is it, Hux?
Yeah, Lieutenant Hux.
Lieutenant Hux in the Star Wars movies. He was also in Frank, which I thought was very good.
It's a General Hux.
General Hux. General Hux. Thank you.
Yeah.
He was in Harry Potter, the Harry Potter movies.
And I believe, let's see. Oh, he was also in Brooklyn. But, you know, he still has somewhat of a boyish charm to him, which I like. But I want him to be somewhat overreaching and maybe a little too ambitious. So that's why I picked him.
Yeah. In the original, it reminded me of one of two things. One is either he was like the son of the person that originally owned the company, and so he got that job, and so he felt he had to like bluster his way around it. Or number two, the other option was that he like did one thing right and then advanced like frighteningly far up. And then he was like, oh no, God, what have I done? Now I actually have to like dress the dress and walk the walk for this. It just felt really forced and really weird, but you know, maybe it's one of those two situations. I don't know, but I like him for whatever version around those that this kind of is. I think he would do that really well.
Yep. But let's move on to Mr. Jackson. I believe this one was Mark's pick.
It was Mark's pick. We're not going to call him up. I think we've probably bothered him enough tonight. Originally played by Porter Hall, Mr. Jackson apparently is from Medford, Oregon. And in Medford, Oregon, they are friendly men who are happy to provide your train ride with unwelcome witness. We'll never forget your face, especially when theirs is the key testimony in your murder trial. So this was originally played by Porter Hall, about whom I know nothing, and that's okay. I like the choice that Mark made for this. I think he took a role that was like interesting, but ultimately kind of a little bit of a throwaway, nothing particularly compelling about the original performance. And he wanted to add a little bit of gusto, a little bit of oomph, a little bit of J. Jonah Jameson, if you will. And he went with J.K. Simmons for this. So I think if J.K. Simmons was in the back of my train and I was trying not to talk to him, I think that would be a much, much more difficult task than when Porter Hall was trying to get his attention. So I like that. I think that's a good one. Jer, on to you. Tell us about Mr. Dietrichson in all of this.
For sure. Mr. Dietrichson is the hapless husband. He signs papers he doesn't read. He has a wife he doesn't pay attention to. And he dies on a train or near a train because of a train. So there's something about a train. I, for Mr. Dietrichson, who is a small role, as most of these minors are, that's why we call them minor characters, I went with somebody that I wanted to give a little bit more personality to the role, and so I chose Dan Fogler for the role. Most recently, you would probably know him from the Fantastic Beasts movies, where he plays Jacob Kowalski, the sidekick.
Got it.
He was also, I mean, many moons ago, he was in Fanboys and did a bunch of comedy stuff. He's got a lot of personality and I really enjoy him. What I liked about him in the Fantastic Beasts movies is that he was sort of the comic relief, but he also had a ton of heart. And I wanted his role to be somebody that you feel a lot more sorry for. like, because he's really just getting shafted all over the place in this movie. He kind of, because of his own sort of ignorance or whatever, he signs off on this insurance policy and then he gets killed. And like he comes across in the original as just sort of not there, but I want somebody that you ultimately are like, this guy's just getting taken by his really awful wife. And so, yeah, Dan Fogler, I like him a lot. And as I said with Sebastian Stan, I want him to see more work. So let's give him some work.
I will pull back a little bit on your description there in noting that he was a pretty awful drunk in the original. I think that was a big motivational part of at least why the audience should not feel bad about him getting knocked off in a really weird way. So I don't know if Fogler would necessarily have that. But if you wanted him to be more taken, I think that's spot on.
Yeah, that would be something that I would probably edit in the role, is make him a little bit more likable and a little less crummy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree with you. But yeah, Dan Fogler as Mr. Dietrichson, and that would send us to Andy and Nino.
Nino Zucchetti is a jerk. Lola Dietrichson is a sucker for jerks, I guess. But Nino is also a sucker, as he gets pulled into Phyllis's wickedly woven web of wackiness. I do not care for Nino. Nino was originally played by Byron Barr. He's the jerk boyfriend of Lola, really, is the only way to put it. But as the movie progresses, we learn there's much more to his character, and he's really saved at the end, kind of inexplicably, by Walter's sudden onset of, I don't know, a conscience from being an accessory to a murder. Anyway, Nino is a very small role, not a lot to him. I needed a young kid, handsome face, things like that. I chose Tom Holland for Nino Zucchetti.
Spider-Man Tom Holland?
Spider-Man Tom Holland.
Interesting.
Fresh-faced Tom Holland.
Interesting.
Very Italian looking Tom Holland.
Wait, what?
What, no?
What? No. Hmm.
What?
Hmm. He plays such a goody two-shoes so well that I felt like Nino is a little bit more of a, I don't know, scumbaggy, that I thought would have a, it would have to be a very different character, which is fine. I think that's totally fine.
Or not. Maybe Tom Holland just shows you a different side of his performance.
That's fair. That's fair.
His non-superhero side.
Cool. I'm down.
Lastly, Kyle, tell us of Lola.
Aye, the aforementioned Lola Dietrichson. Lola is the daughter of our femme fatale lead, Phyllis. She checks off many film noir female boxes. Down on her luck? Check. In a doomed romance? Check. Attracted to the male lead? Check. Oh, Lola, if only you existed in a non-film noir universe. So, Lola was originally played by Jean Heather. I thought she was pretty good. I enjoyed this role. It started out as kind of a throwaway, and then it unexpectedly kind of came back towards the tail half of the movie, which I was not expecting. But, you know, I think that she ultimately is, she needs to be both naive yet still likable. And I think that's a very hard line to walk. I think usually if you come across as too naive, people have a hard time caring or have a hard time believing that you deserve goodness, sort of. I don't know. It's a strange line to see done on film, and it's usually not done very well. The person that I went with was Vanessa Kirby. She played Prince Margaret in The Crown on Netflix, which is a tremendous series, which you should watch if you haven't done so already. She's probably a little bit older than what Jean Heather was in the original, but I still think that she has the look of someone that can be a, you know, the daughter of a middle-aged person, right? So, you know, a little bit older, but not too old. She was also in the latest Mission Impossible movie and was really good in that. I just think that she is very good. I think she would do that job of being, you can see that, you know, that she doesn't like her dad and doesn't really like her mom either. You can see her having a crush on this kind of jerkwad Nino, and at the same time, still kind of want to root for her. So I think that I think she would do that well. So Vanessa Kirby is my Lola. Has anybody watched The Crown on Netflix?
I have watched some of it, and I agree with you. The parts that I saw, I enjoyed very much.
Yeah, she certainly grows throughout. You know, there's been two seasons now, and it's but she's very, you know, naive and sort of full of herself to start with. So I would sort of channel that a bit. All right, so that wraps up our minor characters, and with that, this first part of our discussion of Double Indemnity. Remakers Mark is a proud member of the Math is Hard Network. To find out more information about this podcast or any other podcast on the network, check us out at mathishard.net. There you will find show notes with links to all of the people, movies, and links discussed in this episode. This information is also attached to the show file in the podcast client of your choice. You can find us anywhere you listen to podcasts, including iTunes and Google Play, where you can rate and review Remakers Mark, which would mean the world to us. We are on both Facebook, search for Math is Hard Net or Remakers Mark, Twitter at Remakers Mark, and Instagram at Remakers Mark Podcast. So please join in the discussion there as well. So, gentlemen, that was a good time. Sorry that Mark couldn't make it in person. I'm glad that he made his presence felt here virtually. I think that was really interesting. I don't actually know that we were talking to Mark, which is weird, but, you know, it is what it is. So until the next time when we are all together-ish, may the Force be with you.
And also with you.